The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
For other stories of the week and the week trending, we're joined by Brianna Parkins, Irish Times columnist, and by Lorcan Nine, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic. Brianna, I can't remember how long ago it is now, but we had Marty Morrissey with us here doing a culture club because he was launching the sort of the party nights he was doing around the country. But now he is bringing parties to Spain. What's involved in a Marty party in Spain?
We don't know the full extent yet, but he's promised 6 nights of entertainment. He's going to be emceeing, basically chaperoning, I think, a Marty party at the Holiday World Polynesia Hotel on the Costa del Sol. So the package for the low cost of €1,275 with an additional tax charge, you get your return flights to Malaga, you get your airport transfers, your accommodation, and breakfast and dinner every day. Plus, you get your MC, Marty Morrissey, if he's promised, you know, crack going well into the evening. It's interesting because I'm like, it's not a stand-up comedy routine. I'm not sure what he'll be doing because, you know, on radio he has guests and he has music. So I'm not
quite sure. Some of the guests that he has, musicians and singers apparently would include Tommy Fleming, Sharon Shannon, the Galway Tellers, Paul Harrington, Kate Purcell and Patrick O'Sullivan.
But between that, is he just like chatting? Is he... That remains to be undisclosed.
Okay, who's this aimed at, would you reckon, Lorcan?
I assume people who adore Marty Morrissey. It genuinely sounds like if you were to script a worse nightmare and inflict it upon you as a business, I think I would end up in the Casa de Sal at this event. And yet, I totally see the appeal, and in some ways I think it's genius for people who love him. Who love Irish music, who love that version of crack and love that definition of crack. I think it's like genius. It's a money-making idea that I think works quite well. I would never go. And also, it's weirdly good value. I feel like I'm promoting it. Good value. It's €180 now, a night, breakfast, dinner, flights, sun in October.
And the entertainment?
You could ignore the entertainment, maybe.
Of course, this type of thing happens apparently, particularly on cruise ships. And it's the most unlikely acts who go on cruise ships because, remember being at Bon Jovi in the RDS a couple of years ago, and they were advertising his cruise ship package where you could go on a John Bon Jovi cruise and listen to him sing most nights during the week and other bands in the theatres on these cruises, and gone hardly rock and roll, is it?
Yeah, in Miami there's this Holy Ship, which is a cruise of like EDM, techno, dance music, and you're like, wow, putting a load of people on drugs on a boat surrounded by water for 3 days, what could go wrong? It's been on for 10 years and it's really interesting to see people want to parlay seeing their favourite artist in the flesh. There's the thrill of like, oh, he'll be probably wandering around the hotel corridors when I see him at the pool. Do you know what I mean? There's that extra access that I think people are happy to pay for.
Okay, but the other thing I suppose has come out of this, Lorcan, is after all of the controversy involving RTE and staff members going onto social media as influencers, how has Marty Morrissey promoted this?
Well, when he promoted it, I think he was just very clear that he said it was an ad, and I think that now is going to be the transparent policy with RTE, that everything is disclosed, everything is agreed, everything is allowed, and then everything is communicated to the public that it's happening, it's been paid for, it is an advertisement. So look, I suppose that makes sense, and it's obviously the more serious element to all of this. It's the Marty party indeed, but like when you're talking about RTE and the future of RTE, you very quickly segue into quite serious fundamental questions for Ireland, Irish society and RTE itself.
I think that Marty Morrissey is a protected species, and we were talking about, you know, when we saw Tubbity Gate and Flip Flop Gate, we saw, you know, the public come out with pitchforks around the lack of disclosure, but then Marty Morrissey self-identified as that employee who had a car that he didn't, you know, he was given a car to get himself around events for Renault. He said, look, I didn't accept payment because I considered it to be a GEA-related event and I loved the sport. And then I just, you know, didn't give it back. They didn't ask for it back, and I've had it ever since. And it just felt like the public went, no, you're all right there, Marty. You work away there. We did, yeah, you're fine. So it's interesting. He's sort of seen as this, I don't think there's anyone out there who truly has anything against Marty Morrissey. I challenge someone out there to really...
He's one of the nicest people you'll meet.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, let's move on to other things. Let's get into international politics, Lorcan. Why is Spain's Prime Minister thinking of resigning?
Yeah, my long-term expertise in Spanish parliamentary politics, but...
you know, these are the things. We're always put so much attention to what goes on in America and in Britain, but it's countries like Spain which are so important to the European Union that we're part of. Maybe we should be paying more attention to things like this.
Significantly more attention to it, and it's fundamentally more important than what happens now in the UK and always really in the US. So what's happening is the Spanish Prime Minister, who leads a centre-left kind of minority government at the moment, has said he is considering resigning. So he's not said he is resigning, he's saying he's considering it, and he's going to announce it next week, which we put a pin in that. That's relatively odd to just be considering it rather than resigning. So we're wondering what's going on there. The reason he is cited for why he's doing it is effectively a long-term campaign of what he calls harassment and bullying of him, and in particular his wife. So his wife is there was an article written that suggested that perhaps she may have used influence to get sponsors for the university that she worked for. This is coming from a right-wing group called Clean Hands. And there's a relatively weird quirk in the Spanish legal system where citizens, effectively, if they get enough support, can make something happen in front of a judge. So there is this group called Clean Hands, and they have said, well, because of this article, well, this should be looked into by the judiciary. You can do that in Spain. You can say that it's basically a citizen's proposal, and a judge must look into it, and then that must happen.
So not a citizen's arrest, but a citizen's prosecution, is it?
Effectively, and then a judge looks into and says, does anything need to be looked into? And what this group is doing is the real classic online thing of, well, we don't know. We're just asking questions, perhaps no smoke without fire. But in Spain, you can do that really annoying, we're just asking questions, and force a judge to look into it, even if there is absolutely nothing there. So he is saying that this is making him consider resigning. There is a thought that perhaps this is political theatre, that he is doing this so that he can say, no, I actually do have support, a confidence motion to firm himself up. But obviously this is a big impact even on Ireland, because we have links there in terms of the Palestinian question, etc., with the Spanish government.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, I noticed as well, RT are promoting tonight's Late Late Show on the basis Leo Varadkar is going to reveal why it is that he stepped down as Taoiseach, which made me wonder, hang on a second, he told us there was no reason other than the reasons he told us. There will be murder if he actually says anything tonight that he hadn't said when he did resign.
It feels kind of like a celebrity reveal. Like this, it has a bang of, you know, Una Healey talking about her throuple on a podcast long after the event. Do you know what I mean? To use a form of a popular entertainment show to explain why you resigned, rather than face a barrage of political journalists at a press conference, you know, it generally raises a few questions.
I suspect he's going to say, oh, I said it's exactly as I said, and there's nothing more, and this is a bit of puffery to try and persuade people to watch The Late Late Show.
Maybe, maybe he's resurrecting a secondary career. I don't know. We don't know. We'll have to tune in and find out. But I just think it's interesting to tease this out on an entertainment show, and not in the usual forum, you know, of political journalism.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, though, because I think that dual role the Late Late Show has, I think, can lead to that stuff happening, where, you know, it does do political interviews, it does entertainment, and so, you know, politicians can often use it for, well, I've done the big interview, I've done it on the highest rated show in the country, but because it's that semi-entertainment, semi-political, it might not be a hard-nosed interview in the way that it needs to be.
The host is an excellent host, he's proved himself before, I think he's well able for it, but I just think it's interesting to just want to face off against one person versus your entire press gallery.
Now, as our resident Australian, we have to go to the Rebel Wilson story with you. Tell us, remind people of who Rebel Wilson is, and tell us why her memoir is causing such a stink.
Yeah, so Rebel Wilson is an Australian comedian. You might have seen her as Fat Amy in My Brain Just Gone Blank.
It's the Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect. It's like the a cappella group.
She's very good movie, actually.
It's great. She's
terrific
also
movie.
In the follow-up. She's kind of made a name for herself playing that screwball character. She then lost weight and talked about having to perform the role of the funny fat girl. And that's why I think this autobiography is so interesting, because she's been inside and outside the Hollywood machine. She's seen it all. And I think she's ready to talk about it. Now, the interesting thing about what's happening now is she wrote the autobiography. It's chapter 23. It dealt with someone who she called, can I swear, a-hole? Massive asshole. She called someone a massive asshole. And then it was revealed to that to be Sacha Baron Cohen, who, you know, is most famously known as Borat, Ali G. He has come out swinging, saying that the allegations in her book, which were to do around her being treated on the set of a movie set in Grimsby Brothers, to be, she wasn't treated very well. He harassed her. She was asked to repeat, you know, filming sex scenes unnecessary, kind of things along those nature. He rejected those claims, saying, look, you know, eyewitnesses on set do not, it doesn't accord, that didn't happen. Now in the UK, that part of the book has been delayed and it's also been part stripped out. Now, Rebel Wilson has explained this as peculiarities with the UK defamation system. It's interesting, Sacha Baron Cohen came out and said, look, the UK and you know, Australia have clear policies on you can't publish falsehoods. But the book is still coming out in Australia. It is delayed, but there's no word on those. I think some aspects have been changed. But
isn't there a suggestion that an entire chapter is going to be redacted, that there's literally going to be pages with black lines through it?
I don't think that's... I don't think there's going to be black lines. I think they've pulped certain editions of the book and it will come out. But it's interesting because Rebel Wilson is no stranger to defamation. She knows her way inside and outside.
Yeah, who did she take the case against?
She took the case against Bauer. Bauer Media in Australia owns a lot of magazines. They came up and bought a few, you know, women's interest magazines, and this is what happened. The claims in that were around her, faking her name, faking her background. And she won a record payout of $4.7 million, the highest defamation payout. Because in Australia, if you're taking a defamation case, you're not doing it for monetary gain. You're doing it only to clear your name, because we don't have the same rules and restrictions in Ireland. So she said she was going to donate it. In the end, it got knocked down to $600K. But she knows defamation law inside and out. So I think it's interesting that this publishing is going ahead in Australia, but not in the UK.
Well, first of all, when I saw that this story was on the list and I realised it was on Brianna, I realised I didn't really have to read up a huge amount about it, because, like, Matt is definitely going to go into the Australian on the panel and not myself.
You're trying to deflect here, Lorcan, I think, are you? You have nothing to add, is it?
Plenty to add. She's saying it's not as informed as perhaps it could possibly be. I did look up the reviews of the book and I enjoyed one that said, it's so poorly written, it's distracting. So the book itself perhaps wouldn't have got the publicity that they would have liked it to have. It's a good example of the many we have of, you know, that the Streisand effect thing, and the effect of you try to dampen down a story and the attempt to dampen it down means that people now know a lot more about it. The fact that, you know, the attempt to stop this story coming out from Sacha Baron Cohen means we're now talking about it and we now know much more about the story itself. I think we'll probably never get to the truth of it, really. Cohen has decided that the fact that it has been, you know, redacted means that, well, look, I was right, it is misleading, it is not true. But obviously, look, that's not necessarily what it means. It's just it's not provably untrue what was written. Because, I mean, it's very easy to find out what was in the redacted parts that are going to be redacted in the UK and Australia, because, I mean, it's printable in the US because they have a totally different system. The defamation laws are much, much looser there. So it's very easy to find out, you know, the wording of what was written. So everybody's going to know the story. And the fact now you're going to have copies of the book that are blacked out, it's almost going to become a collector's item.
I think the interesting thing was he used the term she didn't fact check. So I was like, is the part that's taken out to do with dates and times being incorrect and that kind of thing, rather than the, you know, allegations actually happening? So we won't know. But I just think it's interesting to use the word peculiarities and, like, what is in the UK defamation law that isn't in the Australian one? They're very similar. So,
okay, we're going to come back and the week part of the week trending, and we're going to discuss how the British have finally got laws in to send immigrants, refugees, those seeking international protection, directly to Rwanda to be processed after we've had this break. Okay, Brianna Parkins from the Irish Times, Lorcan Nine, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic, are looking at the stories of the week trending. And Lorcan, can you explain what has finally come in Britain in relation to how they're going to process those seeking international protection who arrive on their shores?
Yeah, so look, this has been talked of for quite some time, that effectively it's that as people come in and as they consistently say they want to stop the small boats coming over, so people looking for asylum, that they will have a deal with the Rwandan government where they will pay them a very substantial amount of money, £1.8 million pounds per person going over there, so that effectively if they go to Rwanda, that they put plane loads of people to Rwanda instead of, you know, looking after them within the UK under their international obligation. So they've been trying to get this off the ground for quite some time. It was, you know, stopped by the courts. That's still not fully cleared yet. They don't know if it will definitely happen, but the UK Conservative government are very keen to get that first flight that they have said booked to get it going. It's entirely a PR job. it's an attempt, number one, to be a deterrent that says if you come here, you'll end up going to Rwanda anyway. But it's quite clearly they want the planes to leave, to be seen, to be looked at as being very tough on this issue, and that Rishi Sunak wants it before the next election, to see that he is getting on top of the issue. Their hope is that they will send 300 people, spend a huge amount of money to do that, and that will then act as a deterrent. But they've said that if that doesn't happen, they will keep the deal indefinitely, that they will keep this happening. So it's obviously been criticised widely, but it's not just the UK, I suppose, doing similar deals. I mean, it's different, but it's not widely different. If you look at the EU Migration Pact, one of the big things within that was that Italy have a deal with Tunisia. They wanted to keep that deal. Germany said it wasn't great. Italy won out in that debate, going back
so
and
Italy
forth.
Ships people who arrive in Italy off to Tunisia to be processed.
And with the EU Migration Pact, what will happen is it won't necessarily just be Italy. You know that as you're paying, that there's a line within it that says perhaps when you're paying, you know, instead of taking migrants yourself, you can pay to not take them. But then another country will take them. And then where do they go from that country? Well, it's possible. So I think it's very easy to kind of look at the UK, the Conservative government, and rightly criticise it. But they're not alone in thinking this way. And in fact, UK have gone visiting Italy to look at their deal and to look.
Well, I think Micheál Martin also suggested this week that there are now more people coming into Ireland out of the UK across the border from the north to get away from the possibility that they're starting to fear that they will be deported now that this law has come in. But it just struck me, Brianna, Australia has had a pretty colourful approach to this as well. Wasn't there a large period of time where people couldn't even get onto mainland Australia, that they were held in islands off the coast of Australia?
So it depended how they arrived. So they would be intercepted by the Navy or government protection boat. And if they didn't make it into, if they made it into Australian waters, they could be towed out of Australian waters. If they didn't make it on shore and essentially claimed asylum in Australia, then they were taken to an offshore processing facility. Most famously, you know, there's Christmas Island, there's Nauru. And the conditions of these centres were very problematic. These people were living in tents. There were, you know, issues with malaria. There was issues with children going to school. We saw high rates of self-harm because if you're held indefinitely on an island and there's no future for you, I remember an interview with one of the children who came back, and she said, look, what was the point of studying? We didn't know if we would go to university. We had no future. They had to sit the leaving cert in a tent. Do you know what I mean? It was very difficult. And there was, there is evidence to suggest that it did deter people smugglers. That was the government's sort of message, was this isn't about deterring asylum seekers. It's about deterring people smugglers who are loading up these boats with desperate people, and these people are drowning in the middle of the ocean because they make the boats unseaworthy on purpose so that they have to be towed back to the nearest land, which is sometimes Australia. So we were having people die at sea. The difficulty was one of the Conservative governments claimed, we stopped the boats. And like, no, you put in laws that stopped the reporting on the boats. So originally we would find out when a boat came into Australian waters. They kind of got rid of that. They made it very difficult for people, aid workers and teachers and doctors who would traditionally talk to journalists about conditions, made it very hard for them to speak out. So in a way, yes, it did decrease numbers coming by sea, but then we also saw an increase in people arriving into the airport, you know, the same way that people come into Ireland and they don't have papers. So it's a very mixed bag. And I think Australia is still living with the shame and coming out of that policy decision. It wasn't really clear if it did work, and it was very costly. And it really marred our reputation, I think, in the international community. So it's interesting to see Britain hold up Australia as like, well, it worked there. I'm like, it didn't.
But you also had a case this week in Dunedin as well, that there were people who died in the English Channel in one of these boats trying to get to England.
Yeah, and look, it's such a complicated issue because, like, that deterrent thing, I mean, it you can see it as an excuse, but also is it a reason? And it is hard to know. And I think, you know, even on that EU Migration Pact, Barry Andrews, Fianna Fáil MEP, when he was asked about it, said, I don't have the exact quote, but something with a kind of what I support it with a heavy heart, or I'm conflicted, but I will support it, because trying to get consensus on this when nobody agrees, like nobody agrees on the approach, nobody agrees on the funding, so trying to get some form of consensus does mean some form of compromise on it. So I can see why people find it difficult to support, and yet I can see why people then support it. But I just think that when we're looking at the Rwanda issue, we should also just be looking at Tunisia and the EU, and if you're okay with one, you know, there's an element of needing to be okay with the other, even though they're not the exact same. but they are very similar.
But didn't the Irish government earlier this year issue a tender for flights to bring people out of the country? I suspect that it would be a big stunt for our government before an election to have its own flight of people who had been rejected protection in this country to be flown out of the country rather than letting them find their own way out, as seems to be the case a lot of the time these days.
I saw that Ryanair put their hand up and said, well, we'll take it. And I saw an excellent tweet going, wow, if there's anyone to like really get primed to a violent, not ideal environment, it's putting them on a Ryanair flight back to another country. I think
actually what Michael O'Leary suggests was if they had extra capacity, they would actually rent the aircraft to the British government to bring people to Rwanda.
He sees an opportunity, that man.
He sees an opportunity for publicity everywhere, but I think probably his own shareholders would tell him the possibility of United Nations sanctions would suggest not doing that.
The corporate social responsibility team would not be impressed. I just think this is interesting. I've seen this before. Right before an election, we had a prime minister falsely claim. Now, we don't know whether he knew that this information wasn't correct or this was the information he was given, that asylum seekers were throwing their children overboard so that they would be rescued by the Australian military. Now that was found to be false, but, that election became an immigration election. Australia has been, it's a country built on immigration. These issues have become election issues for as long as I've been alive. So it's really interesting to see that come into play in Irish politics. And I think it's going to be to our detriment if that does become the cleavage on which we vote.
Brianna Parkins from the Irish Times, Lorcan Nine from the Communications Clinic, thank you. One listener, Paul, says 5 people died in the Channel this week and yet the boats still come. If the highest deterrent of all, the risk of death, doesn't stop them, the risk of deportation certainly won't.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.